So Matt Comyn's the boss of Commonwealth Bank. He got plenty on his plate. He's got a deal with the Royal Commission. He's trying to grow his profitability back because no one's allowed to lend anymore. But he says that they'll never do away with the passbook. Martin North follows the banking industry and lending and all these things. He's from Digital Finance Analytics. Martin, good morning.
Hi, Gareth.
Any idea how many people are like Margaret, June's son and Travis's mum and still use a passbook?
Yeah, well, I think it's around 400,000 at the moment. And, you know, it's quite interesting because quite a few of those would be, you know, the older end of the spectrum, and they've always handled it that way and like to see the real physical, tangible, go into the bank and see the thing updated. So, yeah, it's interesting that CBA said they're going to keep it. It's probably good because there are some people who are very digital and are happy, but there are others who really like the physical. So,
the interesting thing will be to see if any of the banks have got any branches left, you know, in 10 years to so that you can actually use your passbook.
Well, that's true. Yes, the number of branches are falling quite fast, and that's because overall, of course, more of us are using our phones and are happy to make electronic transfers, and therefore the purpose of the branches is changing to some extent, although, of course, you can still use the post office as an alternative, so that's still there at the moment. But I think, you know, the writing is on the wall ultimately, because as we move into the next generation or two, effectively, it'll be fully digital, and therefore the physical stuff will be less important.
For people in their 20s and I reckon even their 30s, they wouldn't even know what a passbook was.
Well, that's true. There were often some ties to, the education system. So if you actually had an account when you were a kid, you might have had a passbook. But then beyond that, people tend to migrate to credit cards and those sorts of things. Frankly, what we are now is we're a society built on credit. And, you know, we're educating youngsters to use credit cards and use online services and those sorts of things. But, I have a feeling that because of that, a lot of people who are younger don't have the sense of the value of money anymore. And I actually think that's quite a problem because essentially debt can be a real problem later if people don't know how to manage it.
So that's an interesting point. You think that the old passbook where you actually do sort of, keep track yourself of your ingoings and outgoings as you do your banking. You think that that helped people manage money and understand the value of money better?
I actually do, because my surveys tell me that about half of households have no real budget, so they actually don't know what they're spending, what they're receiving each week or each month. And as a result of that, their finances often get in a bit of a mess. And it's almost too convenient. You know, you've got your credit cards and you've got your electronic payments and your online banking and stuff. So all of those things make it really easy to grab some more money when you want it. And so I think we've lost the discipline, if I can be honest, about managing our finances quite often. And then, of course, it tends to sort of, catch you unawares because suddenly you discover you haven't got enough to pay the bills and all those things. So I think there's an education question here about how we actually help, particularly those, people coming up through, to really understand the value of money and how to manage money. And clearly the apps and those sorts of things can help if they are actually used the right way. But I think it's almost too easy to get credit these days.
Well, I'd be fascinated in your opinion on Afterpay, which we talked about at some length on the program on Friday and took some extraordinary calls about the way people are using Afterpay, like using credit cards to pay off their Afterpay debt. It was just horrifying.
Yeah, so it's really quite an interesting phenomenon, and it's growing like topsy, right? Because effectively it allows people to have instant gratification and potentially, pay back later. But of course, there's a very high level of defaults, and as you say, then people end up piling on credit cards, and so it basically just builds the debt bomb a bit bigger. And of course, that's the thing that I keep coming back to, that we've got so much debt in the household sector of Australia, mortgage debt and personal credit, that it's becoming harder and harder for households to navigate their way through this. And now, of course, with the current economic situation that we're in, the government and the RBA is essentially saying, well, go borrow some more because we need your help to keep the economy going. So really the problem we've got is we've built debt into the system in a way that makes it impossible to build the economy other than through more household debt.
Well, see, one of the investment banks today, I mean, we're all anticipating an interest rate cut on Tuesday, but one of the investment banks now predict that there'll be four interest rate cuts before they go up again.
Yeah, so my view is that there will be quite a series of cuts. We've got ourselves into a rather difficult situation economically here in Australia. We've been very reliant on high iron ore prices and high household debt and household consumption. Household consumption is now easing. And, of course, employment is quite low, but income is not rising. And inflation is very low. So all the sort of leading indicators suggest we have a few problems. So the Reserve Bank is going to cut rates. The question will be how quickly and how deep they go. But my own view is that even if they cut four times down to, you know, 0.5%, that probably won't be sufficient to pull the economy back to where people would like to see it. So I would expect to see a bit later some more unconventional strategies, a bit like Europe did or the US did, with through quantitative easing, where they create more money or they hand more money out to households to try and get them to spend. So, you know, we are in a very, very uncomfortable part of the cycle at the moment, and I fear that we're going to find that the economy is going to bumble along for the next couple of years.
There's a bit of anecdotal evidence around, maybe slightly stronger than anecdotal, but the election result on Saturday does seem to have injected a bit of confidence around the place. I know we're talking about Matt Comyn and passbooks, but he also noted that home loan applications were up 10% last week on what they have been in recent times. Mortgage brokers are telling me that they're starting to see some extra activity. Have you got any data about that, or do you have any sort of views on whether that's real or temporary, or whether it might be sustaining?
Yeah, so it's real, and it probably is temporary. I mean, I think a lot of people were hanging off what the election was going to be, because if Labour had got in, I think they would have tackled negative gearing and the other strategies that they had. That would have put an extra dampener on the property sector. But I think there was a sort of a pent-up reaction. I'm not quite sure how sustainable it will be. Remember, we've still got very high household debt. We've got very high home prices, and income is not growing. So there are still some limits. Now, I know banks have also started potentially slackening their lending stands a little, but of course, we've got to be careful not to go back to the sort of situations that we were through the Royal Commission, where we know that many people got loans they should never have got in the first place. So there's a little bit of freeing and a little bit of momentum. I should be very interested to see whether it really is sustainable or whether it peters out later in the year. And I think it will go back to ultimately household incomes. If household incomes remain depressed, I suspect that we won't see this momentum continue. But if incomes start to rise a bit, then perhaps that will be the time when we'll see prices begin to stop falling and then perhaps begin to move up. But of course, over in the West, you've had an experience over 5 years where home prices have drifted lower consistently over that period of time. So perhaps we should learn from you guys that that is conceivable even in the East Coast.
Well, it totally is conceivable. And the other thing that it's stubbornly done is defy every prediction of people calling the bottom. Like, it's... I've heard the bottom called nearly every month for the last 2 to 3 years, and we're not there yet.
Yeah, well, I've been a little bit more sanguine than many.
Yeah, we've spoken to you on the program about exactly that.
Exactly. And that's because you've got to look at it holistically. Now, I know that the property sector and mortgage brokers and the finance sector are all talking the housing market up. And, of course, the government is wanting that because, like I said before, it is household expenditure that is supporting the economy. About half of GDP comes from household expenditure, right? And if households continue not to spend and not to borrow, then the economy gets weaker. But my point is, we are in such high levels of debt at the moment, that we can't go on borrowing forever. I think we've almost reached peak debt. And that's really the question. How much debt is too much debt? And, have we got to the point where, because of that, the normal levers that the Reserve Bank might manipulate won't necessarily translate to the sort of outcomes that they would like to see? And I actually think that many households are very cautious because they can't see income rising. They know they've got a lot of debt on their plate. They're seeing home prices still fairly wobbly, many in negative equity. And therefore, I think this is going to be a stubbornly slow grind for quite some time yet.
Bring back the passbook. That'll solve it.
Well, it makes things a whole lot easier.
Thanks, Martin.
Good to talk to you.
Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. I appreciate Martin's take. I think he's a realist. I don't think he's a spruiker. I think he's a realist. It's good to hear his point of view to counteract some of the more optimistic forecasts from self-interested parties that you sometimes see. We'll see.